Four.
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
Haberhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Crusher Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Welcome back, everyone.
There we go.
Bless people.
And yeah, make sure when you're grabbing a phone, make sure it's your own phone and not somebody else's phone. I think they'd really appreciate that. I did say on there, you know, so grab a phone and call them. Make sure that's your own.
Your phone. Yeah.
All About Wine is not responsible for damage to your
little disclaimer there.
Yeah. That's right. I think we need to work that in there somehow. Welcome back to the program.
We still have an ending, so we're thinking something else.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We'll have to put a disclaimer at the end or something. Be sure to follow us on Twitter now. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/allaboutwineBTR. It's the same as on Facebook, facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. And I've noticed there's more people liking us on that, which is good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's I forgot where we're up to, like 24 or something, but it's good. It'll get there. And Twitter, I think I'm up to like 15 on Twitter right now. So
wow, you're gonna pass this. Let's pass this on Facebook. Yeah,
it's all about the keywords. Or email the show, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's the best way to get in touch with us and to follow the show. And I know Ron's on Facebook posting updates and everything on there, and I get on Twitter before the shows, during the shows sometimes, and post updates there. So you want to stay in tune with us and get the latest, make sure you connect with us on Twitter and on Facebook. That's the best way. So we have a good show tonight, again, as always, and you have an intro, so we need to go ahead and do that, and we'll wait a while and get our guest on.
Get our guest on in about 7-8 minutes there. But she's waiting for a call. No, we're going to talk about – we've been talking about Oregon. And that's where we've been last, 3 weeks, 4 weeks? Oh, wow, more than that. I think we started right after Christmas, didn't we? So we've been talking about Oregon. And the different guests I have, we have guests next week and the week after that. So we have guests coming up in the future here. But – with no Oregon guests tonight. And because I had no Oregon guests tonight, I felt this was a great time to talk about something that is in the news and that's out there now and is something we need to really start looking at. And let me just say this now, and I will say it again later in the program too. If you can think of names, contact us either through the Facebook page or tweet Mike back or give us a call or whatever, and I'll tell you what I mean about names shortly here. But lately, there's been a big, I don't want to say push, but a big awareness is a good word, of the name designations of wines, like areas that we're so used to areas we're so used to hearing, champagne and port and sherry. These names, technically, a sherry is from Spain. That's where the sherries come from. It's a Spanish name for a wine that's fortified and stuff. Port is from Portugal. We've talked about this on previous programs, too, and where port is from and all that. Champagne is from the Champagne region of France, a small little designated area that is in the Champagne region of France, and that's Champagne. But the United States never did sign on to those treaties. So historically, wines have been known by the names reflecting their origins and styles sometimes. Like a Bordeaux is a certain style, and a Moselle, Chianti are all legally defined, reflecting the traditions of the wines and the regions that they are. These are naming conventions, if you will, appellations. We use appellations in this country for wines, but also in France they have appellations. And the appellations dictate where the grapes are grown, but from which where the grapes in the wines were grown, and also which grapes went into the wines and how they were vinified and all that. It covers a whole bunch of stuff. The appellation system is strong in the European Union. It's a very very powerful system. The United States system, the American Viticultural System, or the AVA, restricts the use of certain regional names in America, like we have Napa Valley or Santa Rosa, Willamette Valley, and stuff like this. And the AVA designation does not restrict the type of grapes used. All it is AVA has to be in those areas, not the type of grapes, but from that area. In most of the world, wines labeled champagne must be made from the grapes grown in the Champagne region of France and fermented using a certain method, the champagne method traditionnel, based on international trademarks, which were included in the 1919 Treaty of Versailles. However, the United States did not sign on to this as part of the thing. In the United States, a legal definition called semi-generic has enabled U.S. winemakers to use certain generic terms like champagne, sherry, port, stuff like that. And if there appears to next to those terms the actual appellation of origin or origin, so we can say Napa Champagne or a Kansas Champagne or a New York Champagne, as long as it says that, we can call that, or a sherry from whatever area. This is a New Mexican sherry or a Texas sherry. And the same thing with ports. This is a strawberry port, which I make. It's a designation of a strawberry port. Same thing with all these others. Now the law is coming out saying that, it's not coming out now. The law has been in existence for some time that's saying that this is a... the European Union is trying to find a better way to control this, and the United States is also trying a better way to control their AVAs. Hence, we have a law that was passed. I'm not going to read the law. We have a guest coming up shortly here. We're going to talk to her first before I go into this law and talk all about the law and everything. If Michael, go ahead and get a hold of our guest, then we'll get her on here. But I'll read you the law and I'll talk about the law after we get off. But the law is, let me give you the legal title. It's Title 26, Subtitle E, Chapter 51. Subchapter F, Part 3 of 5388, and it is Designation of Wines. And that is what we're going to talk about a little bit here. Our guest, which Mike is getting a hold of now, and we'll go into this more. I've got some articles and stuff like this to go into and some different things to point out. But what we're going to do, what we're going to talk about is these designation stuff, and also Gladys has got some more stuff to talk to us. Our guest is going to be Gladys from the Wine Institute of California, a big organization out there, a great organization. I was familiar with Wine Institute of California many, many years ago. And Gladys is, well, as a title, communications manager, but she works in the office, knowledgeable. She knows what's going on. She knows how to take care of and how to handle stuff there. And she agreed to come on and talk with us a little bit about a couple of things, and this, the designation of wine particularly, and then she's got some other stuff that she, we as Americans should be very excited about. So we're going to get her on, and I think we're going to get her on.
Okay. Yeah, you called me through the main line, so I can give you my direct line if you need it.
Okay. Mike is going to, oh, it looks like we might lose her for a minute and come back. I just pulled her up here, and she was talking to Mike about coming on to a different line. So we'll get that in a few minutes here. But go back to this this designation here. We are, well, let's see, are we going to do another line or not? I'm not sure what's going on here. Yes, he's going to call her on another line. I see that now, so we got a few minutes before we get her back on. But Gladys is with the Wine Institute of California. Wine Institute of California is a good organization, too. If you'd like to check it out, it is under Discover California Wines about Wine Institute. It's the Wine Institute of California. It's got the member site. It's got all sorts of stuff. But just you can search it under Wine Institute or Wine Institute of California, and there's lots of information there. Go into that, and it will show you. It's got recipes. It's got stuff about the wineries in California, and about grapes, and about food, and about the different areas of California, and a bunch of information there. So our guest is from there, and I believe she's ready to come on now. Gladys, got you on the air. Are you there?
Yep, I sure am.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us. I do appreciate that. I saw you guys sitting there playing around, and then you disappeared and you came back. Another line here, so I guess you changed lines. So.
Yes.
I just introduced just introduced you, and I also introduced what we're going to talk about tonight, this designation of wines. Can you talk about it? Tell us about that a little bit, please.
Well, we were talking beforehand about how the use of semi-generic terms were being used in the U.S. Semi-generic terms, there are 16 of them. Champagne, port, sherry, Madeira, Marsala, Burgundy, Chablis, and a number of others. And these terms actually got their start back in the 1800s when the European immigrants came to the States, and they were discovered that they could make pretty good wine in California and elsewhere, and they didn't know how to identify these wines to their customers. So they would say, well, these are wines made in the champagne style or the port style, and pretty soon the term port and champagne appeared on the label, but the U.S. government always required that the geographic origin of the wine should accompany the term. So whenever you see champagne, you'll always see the geographic origin. It'll always say California champagne or New York champagne or wherever it comes from. So the use of these semi-generic terms, I don't believe are misleading or unlawful at all. In fact, it's legal, and it's been legal. Legally labeled California champagne has been produced and sold in the U.S. dating back to 1857. So now, the Europeans, I guess, you know, they never did object to the use of these terms, and it wasn't until about, not the 1970s, when some French champagne houses actually recognized how some of the great growing areas of California, and they established some sparkling wine houses in California. But they, you know, they were following European regulations, and they would not call their products champagne. They because it wasn't grown in the Champagne district of France. And so they started calling their products sparkling wine. And, you know, I have to admit, when I first came to California 30 years ago, I didn't know what sparkling wine was. I thought it was some sort of carbonated wine or something, you know. And then I discovered, oh, it's champagne. You know, it's California champagne. So, and I thought, well, I can't be the only one who thinks this. You know, it's like I thought I was a fairly savvy, you know, consumer. But anyway, but since of course I know now. But and I suspect there are people in parts of the country who are maybe new to the products who don't know that sparkling wine is champagne. And so I think when these, you know, a couple of these French champagne houses started these wineries in California, then there was a ruckus about, well, you know, California shouldn't be using the term champagne. And so there has been this on-running discussion and trade negotiations about this for some time. It's been a long process. And the U.S. courts ruled that the term, terms such as champagne and port had become generic. You know, like, for instance, when you see something like French fries, you don't expect those French fries to be from France, or German chocolate cake to be from Germany, or, you know, Hawaiian punch to be from Hawaii. So, I mean, champagne was the same thing. And because there's a label, it always says California champagne or Napa Valley champagne or whatever. So the U.S. signed an agreement with the European Commission in March of 2006. And this was like 20 years of negotiations, and they agreed on a number of things, one of them being the use of semi-generic terms. And it was a huge, huge deal for us to give up future new brands being approved by the U.S. government labeled with these semi-generic terms. But the existing brands were grandfathered in because some of these companies had been using champagne for the last 150 years and made significant marketing investments in their brand names, and they had trademarks, you know, substantial long-term investments going back to the 1800s. And, you know, how could you ask them to not use champagne anymore or port? Right. And actually, you know, those terms, those labels that are labeled California champagne are only sold in the U.S. They don't export them outside of the country.
And, was that law or something?
Because they don't allow, you know, especially in Europe, they don't allow products that are labeled champagne
in any way, shape, or form
distributed unless they were from the Champagne region of France, even if they are, say, California champagne. So those products are only labeled in, you know, the U.S. And I think, you know, and people who have been buying certain brands for years, they, you know, they want to continue to buy something that they know.
Right.
So the only problem with this is that there are some producers who want to make a port, and if you can't use port anymore, I just don't know what else you would call it. You know, sweet dessert wine.
Made in the port style. You know, I don't know.
I'm not even sure that would be approved. I mean, I just don't know. So that's problematic. I mean, they could come up with a proprietary name, like I know that Quadi calls their port Starboard. You know, a sailing
but
term.
You would have to know that to know
yes.
that it's a port, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, just like sparkling wine, you know, that's used quite a bit, but still, how many people don't know that's what it is? So when you start using, and that's something that I was going to ask you about, all these sherry and port particularly, I mean, we can say sparkling wine, which, you know, maybe we can educate, but port and sherry, I think there's going to be a problem. I really do.
I do too. It was a huge thing for U.S. producers to give up. And frankly, you know, there are a lot of sparkling wine brands out there labeled sparkling wine, but you know, about 90% of the U.S. produced champagne and sparkling wine is labeled champagne. So for them to tell them that you can't use champagne more, that's huge. So they obviously they had to be grandfathered in. It was the only. I mean, it would have been, you know, trademark law and just intellectual property rights and all this stuff. So that was the only way that, and, you know, and the EU signed that agreement. They got their 27 member countries, the governments of those 27 countries, to sign the agreement. So it was a huge, huge deal. And it wasn't, that was the only one aspect of, you know, they really, the Europeans really play hardball with some of these trade agreements. They were saying that they didn't recognize some of our winemaking practices. It was sort of a another trade barrier, like, and they would give us temporary approval of being able to, say, like, add acid or, you know, I know that Washington allows you to add sugar, but you can't in California. But certain things, like, or you couldn't use oak chips, they would give you temporary approval. And very, it was a very unstable way of doing business. There wasn't any, you know, it created continuous uncertainty. So that was another aspect. So we got mutual recognition of each other's winemaking practices. And in the agreement, we said, okay, we've given you, you know, our country has very rigorous regulations in protecting trademarks and place names, and but there didn't seem to be a comparable system in the EU. So we said, well, you know, we're protecting your place names, but how about you protect our place names as well? Because we recognized and protected over at least 1,000 of their names, and so we asked them to come up with some way to protect our place names. So anyway,
Wow. Well, it brings up a couple of questions in the fact that what is that all we got for this enormous trade that we made with them here, and the fact that they're going to protect our names? I don't see how that's going to be anywhere near as big as what we're doing for them.
Well, I know, but in a way, the fact is that it, just removing, I mean, the recognition of mutual winemaking practices, and they are have to be they are different because of differences in climate and history and cultural practices, and this it removed a major impediment to the growth of our wine export business overseas. You know, because now they could make some. You know, we needed stable market conditions, and now we can. You know, the California vintners can focus their attention on promoting the high quality and their brands, and not have to worry about whether or not they can do business in Europe next year.
Okay. Because Europe has all these, I mean, vineyard designations and how the grapes are grown to be made into certain things and all that stuff. And since we don't, then they're going to accept the fact that we don't and take the grapes in and take the wines in and say, okay, these are, okay, I see what you're saying here.
Well, so yeah, and actually it's great because we had a record year this in 2011 for wine exports. It reached a new record of $1.4 billion. And
wow.
10 years ago, we were shipping about $540 million worth of exports and winery revenues, and now it's nearly $1.4 billion. It's like $1.39 billion. So that's very exciting news. And you know, almost nearly half of our exports go to Europe, and then Canada's another large market in Japan. But Asia and China, basically China and Hong Kong are like huge markets. They were just hardly on the radar screen a decade ago, and then there was, you know, the government had recognized China and gave them permanent normal trade relation status, and now it's like triple digit growth in China, and we've made some significant marketing investments there last year because China hasn't been in a recession. They have a growing middle class, and they have a taste for finer things in life, and some of it is California wine. And one thing that we have found about California is that they may not be familiar with our wines, but they do know about California, and California has a very positive image. They like our movies, you know, they know it's a beautiful country, there's lots of great wine and food, and that's how we sell our wines. So so China and the Asian markets have been very exciting.
Is China part of this trade agreement?
No, that was back in March of the March 2006 agreement was between the U.S. and the European Commission.
So just the EU, it has none others. I understand other countries have joined it since then that aren't in the EU, though. Do you know about that?
No, I don't.
I read something somewhere, and I wish I can find it now. But since that original one was signed, there's been other countries that have joined that. I don't know if it's. I don't know. I wish I can find it now.
I know that some countries have agreed to stop using these semi-generic names entirely. But But I have to tell you, what they don't tell you is that the European Commission compensated them.
Oh.
Compensated the companies for stopping use of these names. They haven't approached the American producers with such an agreement because it would cost a fortune and nobody could afford it.
That's true. Yes, especially some of the big ones, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking bazillions of dollars. So, you know, I mean, I think somebody would talk about it, but they're not going to, you know, who can afford it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Especially since the European Union is hurting so much for money anyway. They're not about to.
But the fact is that, you know, champagne, I mean, it's just that's the way people know about products. And it has a, you know, it's just, it's a term that's been used for the last 150 years.
Right, yeah.
In this country.
And it's clearly
completely apparent where the wine is from because it's always labeled with a geographic origin adjacent to the term, you know, port or champagne or whatever it is being used.
So the TTB is no longer going to approve anything that says port or champagne or sherry on the label or any of these other dozens of them?
Not any new brands, but the existing brands can continue to be used.
What about, say, a champagne seller that's been doing it for a number of years and they come out with a new champagne? They can't call it that, a champagne then?
No, it would have to be the same brand as before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They could use the same name, but maybe, I mean, if, say, you know, like California champagne, and if they came up with like a different type of champagne, like, you know, a pink one or a sweet one or a brut, or, you know, that's fine as long as the same brand name, you know, but they couldn't come up with an entirely different brand name and have it, you know, they can come
even
up with
even if it's from the same house, they can't do it. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they could call it, you know, yeah, they couldn't call it something else.
Oh.
They couldn't be a different brand. Because every label, new brand name has to get approved by the TTB. They won't approve it.
Yeah, and so therefore that's it anymore. No more new port sherries or any of these other long list of places are no longer going to be shown on it.
A while ago, I can't recall what year it was, but, you know, exports were about 10% of California's production that was exported abroad, and now it's up to about 20%. So it's a fair amount of our business.
Yeah, and 20% for the number of cases that are produced in California each year, that is substantial.
Right. And you know, the European Union has nothing to worry about as far as their imports into the U.S. Their exports exceed U.S. exports by 7-1 in value.
Wow.
So, and the champagne producers, they've experienced a 23% increase in their shipments to the U.S. in the last decade. So clearly, consumers are not mistaking California or New York champagne with French champagne.
Wow. But if you start throwing different names in there too, and I make a strawberry port, and you know I will continue to make a strawberry port, and it's not a problem on that. But finding another name for port seems almost
impossible.
That and sherry. These are the two that, I mean, there's so many of these others in this list here that you mentioned. I think
Burgundy and Chablis will eventually, through time, go away by themselves. People are already starting to use terms like red table wine or white table wine.
Or even Chianti, that's going away too. It's just a
yeah,
light.
Yeah, but
you know,
port, you know, it's like, and somebody had suggested, well, why not use something like Tawny?
Yeah.
But apparently the Europeans are making a fuss about, you know, using that term as well. So it's an ongoing, you know, negotiation. But, you know, we signed an agreement in 2006, and it took 20 years to reach that point, and the negotiations are ongoing.
So, for some reason, just lately, I'm hearing a lot about it, though, and I don't know why. People are coming into the winery and asking. I'm seeing articles in the paper. I'm seeing different things. And it just seems like all of a sudden it's becoming prominent in the news.
There is a group that is still trying to argue that the U.S. should not be able to allow champagne terms. And it's really outrageous because the French government signed an international agreement recognized by the World Trade Organization, and yet they continue to go ahead and advocate that it shouldn't be done, even though their own French government signed this agreement. So it's a PR campaign that they're out there trying to say that California champagne is not champagne.
I'm seeing some of our writers and bloggers and stuff here in the United States that are saying that we should do away with the champagne, sherry, port, and all those labels, and stop this, even stopping the grandfathering. To me, that's absurd, but that's just my opinion. I have to, you know, qualify. But
well, it's 90% of the volume that's labeled champagne in this country.
Oh, wow.
I just, you know, there's a lot of teeny tiny producers that might say California champagne or New York champagne, or I think there's one even in New Mexico, but I think they label it sparkling wine. So clearly, you know, it's a popular product. And the thing about champagne, though, I really feel like it's always been viewed as a beverage that you enjoy at celebrations, but it really is, you know, basically it's a table wine, and it could be enjoyed with all different sorts of occasions. But anyway, it seems to have that, you know, and I think the use should be expanded, no matter what you call it, you know.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's a great drink. I mean, and I try to advocate that as much as I can to people. It's champagne is not just for the special occasion; it's for any occasion. It's just, you know, there's some great champagnes out there. And, you know, even picking up an Italian champagne or a Prosecco or a Spanish champagne or any of these, they're all very nice.
I guess they call them cavas.
Cavi, I think. C-A-V-I,
yeah.
I think it's cavi. And then the Italians call it Prosecco or Prosetta or something. I'm
Prosecco,
sure.
Yeah.
Prosecco, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, we've used this term for so long, it's going to be difficult to get the public aware of these.
It's generic. You know, it's just, what, you know, it's just.
It's, and, you know, once we get used to generic terms, it's just, you know, I mean, like, you know, a Band-Aid. You know, I mean, that should be a bandage. Well, what they, you know, I'm the new advertiser for Band-Aid now, and, you know, they use Band-Aid, and then they use the bandage term and all that because they don't want it to become a generic term anymore. I mean, it's just some of this stuff gets a little bit out of hand, I think.
Well, I have to admit, I use, say, give me a Kleenex, thinking, you know, I guess I should say give me a tissue, but I always say Kleenex.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, and that's another good example, you know. And for years, people used to call it the Frigidaire as opposed to the refrigerator because the Frigidaire was the brand out there. You know, we tend to do that, call it what we know, and that's a good example on the Kleenex there as opposed to some of these others. So, you know, champagne is probably going to be around for a while, and if it took them 20 years before they finally got to this agreement, it's going to probably take them a lot longer than that to finally agree of what they're going to do. And with it, exports, you know, that's, I want to hit that again quickly here. Exports are up.
They're up 22% compared to the previous year.
Wow.
And the volume's up about 6%. And, you know, our usual, you know, the largest market, of course, is the European Union. And then followed by Canada, Hong Kong, Japan, and then China, which is up 42%.
Wow.
So
there's I get notices all the time at the winery from different exporters wanting to know if we would like to start shipping summer wines to China. I mean, China seems to be starving for American wines of all sorts.
And who's that? Let's see, the basketball player Yao Min. Is that
yes?
He just started a wine brand with his name
yes,
on it.
Yes, he did.
And I guess the bottle is California Cabernet, and I believe it's going for like $298. I want to say or
$289. He did this. That's a little. Yo's company, Yo Family Wines, produced 5,000 cases of his first release at $289 a bottle.
Oh, and he's so wildly popular, and he seems to be such a nice person, and what a great representative for, you know, for wine. So, And fortunately, it's California wine. So
and it's California wine.
We're happy about that.
He said that that wine will be available in the United States later this year for $170 per bottle. So
a bargain.
It's a 2000 Napa Valley Cabernet is what it little article I had here on that. Yes, in fact,
2000.
I just,
oh my goodness, that how did they find a wine that old?
I don't know. Yeah.
So it must be, you know, I would imagine it's ready to drink.
Even if they oaked it that long, it has to be ready to drink by now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, Gladys, thank you. I'll tell you what. Before you get off, give us a little of information. So if anybody wants to go to the website or get a hold of the Wine Institute of California, they can. Or Facebook or anything. Let us know.
Our the website, you know, is www.wineinstitute.org, O-R-G. And, you know, really, that's a trade website that's really directed towards the wineries and them doing business and finding out about, you know, regulatory and trade matters. And we have a lot of statistics there, and, of course, our press release on exports. But really, I think your audience might be interested in a new website called www.discovercaliforniawines, and that's plural.com. And that is more got more consumer information, recipes. It talks about a listing of the wineries with links to all the wineries and whether they have a public tasting room or by appointment or close to the public, and, you know, learns about regions and just all about the California wine industry, the sustainable wine growing, green wine making and wine growing practices. And so I think, you know, it's just lots of little factoids. It's not heavy on the text. It's lots of great pictures of California wine country and interesting factoids. So I think that's the one I'd really like people to go check out because it's fun.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. I didn't know that was out there, so that's good. And thank you very much. I asked you to be on for 10, 15 minutes. You said, oh, I can't talk for that long. You talked for about 25. So.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Mike, do you have anything to ask Gladys before we let her go here?
No, I was just looking at the website that she gave us. And, very, very good information there. Very nice website. Well done.
Thank you.
Just getting into the surface of it now, and there's plenty there, so it's very nice, very good.
Yeah,
thank you.
We hope it'll help people with their travel planning.
Oh yeah,
definitely. I can definitely see that. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Gladys, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. And if I want any information, I know who to call out there now. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
You
now. Bye.
Thank you.
Very good. Very good. When we talked earlier, she said, I don't know if I have enough information to even talk that long. Maybe 5-10 minutes at the most. And
mm-hmm.
So she's great. She had a lot of stuff for her. But let me continue on this though. Let me read you. I'm gonna read you. It's not real long, but it's a little bit legalese here. But I'm gonna read you the bill. The doesn't. I said it before on there. Let me say it again. This is title 26, subtitle E, chapter 51, subchapter F, part 3, bill number 5388, or law number 5388. It's entitled Designation of Wines. A, standard wines. Standard wines may be removed from premises subject to the provisions of this subchapter and be marked, transported, and sold under their proper designation as to kind and origin. Or, if there is no such designation known to the trade or consumers, then under a truthful and adequate statement of composition. In other words, if it's got a designation on it, you can sell it. If it doesn't, then it has to be a truthful designation. Other wines, this is subsection B. Wines other than standard wines may be removed for consumption or sale and be marked, transported, or sold only under such designations as to kind and origin as adequately describes the true composition of such products and as adequately distinguishes them from standard wines, as regulations prescribed by the Secretary shall provide. And then it uses use of semi-generic designations. In general, only if there appears in direct conjunction therewith an appropriate appellation or of origin disclosing the true place of the origin of the wine, and the wine so designated conforms to the standard of identity, if any, for such wine contained in the regulations under this section, or if there is no such standard, to the trade understanding of such class of wine. In other words, it's it has to be designated enough in that area and that type to be a designated wine. Now, in general, this is next session, determination of whether name is semi-generic. And this is what Gladys was talking about. This is what we, these are the wines. It says, in general, except as provided in subparagraph B, which I'll read in a minute, a name of geographic significance, which is also the designation of a class or type of wine, shall be deemed to have become semi-generic only if so found by the secretary. Certain, in this subsection, or subparagraph B says, certain names treated as semi-generic. The following names shall be treated as semi-generic. Now, these are names, semi-generic simply means these are the names that we can put on the bottles of wine if they've been grandfathered in. We can't anymore. These are names we can put on the bottle of wine, which we have to include the state or the area of origin. We can't just put it on there and say this is this, but we can say this is a California this or whatever. The following names are Angelica, Burgundy, Claret, Chablis, Champagne, Chianti, Malaga, Marsala, Madeira, Moselle, Port, Rhine wine or Hoc, Sauternes, Haute-Sauternes, Sherry, and Tokay. Now, some of those we don't really worry about. Some of those we don't have a problem with because they are really not used much. You do find jug wines that say Rhine wine or a Chianti or stuff like this. But like Gladys just said, though, it's these names are fading out. You're not seeing them much anymore. If anything, you're seeing a jug wine here or there or something that'll say that. But most of the time, they're being changed into just terms like a red wine or red table wine and stuff like that. It's a special rule for use of semi-generic designations. In general, in the case of any wine to which this paragraph applies, in the case of wine of the European community, designations referred to in subparagraph C, which we'll get to, may be used for such wines only if the requirement of subparagraph B is met. And in any case, any other wine bearing a brand name or brand name and fanciful name, semi-generic designations may be used for such wine only if the requirements of clauses 1, 2, and 3 and B are met. Now, the requirements, this is the thing. The requirement of this clause is met if there appears in direct conjunction with the semi-generic designation an appropriate appellation of origin disclosing the origin of the wine, which is basically telling it where it's from. You can say this is a champagne, a California champagne, or a New York Burgundy, or a Florida Sherry, or a New Mexico. A friend of mine down in New Mexico, Arizona, a friend of mine in Arizona, Keith down in Keith, I can't think of the middle name of your winery. He has a winery down there, and he just made a sherry, and he labeled it sherry, but it says Arizona sherry, so that's legal. Then, the requirement of this clause is met if the wine conforms to the standard of identity, if any, for such wine contained in the regulations under this section, or if there is no such standard, the trade understanding of such class of type, or type. In other words, if the wine falls up under these regulations in this area, then it will be met as semi-generic. And then the third part, the requirement of this clause is met if the person or its successor in interest using the semi-generic designations held a certificate of label approval or certificate of exemption from label approval issued by the secretary for wine label bearing such a brand name or brand name and fanciful name, before March 10, 2006, on which such semi-generic designation appeared. Grandfathered in. Basically what this paragraph is saying, if any of these labels had these names on it, the stack I just read you, if any of these labels had these names on it before March 10, 2006, they can continue to do so. After that date, they can't. Section C says, wines to which paragraph applies, in general, except as provided in Clause C, which I just read, this paragraph shall apply to any grape wine which is designated as, again, Burgundy, Claret, Chablis, Champagne, Chianti, Malaga, Marsala, Madeira, Moselle, Port, Retsina, Rhine, Wine, or Hulk, Sauternes, Haute Sauternes, Sherry, or Tokay. Exceptions, this paragraph shall not apply to wine. Keith Joshua, yes, thank you. It's Keith Joshua. I can't think of Keith's middle name. That's his middle name, Keith Joshua, thanks. This paragraph should not apply to wine which contains, now, again, this is something else that you need to look at. This paragraph should not apply to wines which contains less than 7% or more than 24% alcohol by volume. So if you want to make yourself a port and make it 25% alcohol by volume and call the port, from what I can understand, that is okay. And they have to approve it. Also, it is intended for sale outside the United States and does not bear a brand name. So these are designated. That's the law. That's the way it's written up. It's legalese and all that stuff. But it's basically saying, just like... Well, actually, we were just talking to Gladys there, and just like Gladys told us, it's an agreement to stop the use of these names that we've been using any further. They're grandfathered in. I get a lot of people into the winery, though, an awful lot of people. When I'll mention champagne while I'm talking, or I'll mention something along that line, and or even they'll bring it up, oh, it's not champagne, it's sparkling wine. And they'll say that quite often. It's not champagne. It's a sparkling wine. And so, you know, people are starting to learn the term. It's not something that is caught on real fast yet. And, you know, the people know that term, sparkling wine, as a champagne. It's becoming acceptable. What I'm going to throw out to you listeners out there, and if you hear this live or if you hear this on archives or whatever, if you can think of other names for port and sherry, and these are the ones that, you know, I mean, I can go through this list again and say, oh, okay, we can look at all this stuff and all that, but there's really not too much of a problem with most of these names here. I don't think, anyway. I don't think there's, you know, I mean, I don't see an Angelica wine. I don't see a Sauternes too much. Again, you might see a generic jug of it. A Tokay, that's, you know, something that you don't see too much. But a Rhine wine, you know, maybe every once in a while, but, it, you know, only if it's from Germany. But the ones you do see is port and sherry. To all of you listeners out there, if you can think of a generic term for port and or sherry, email me. Let me know. That's All About Wine 101@gmail.com. So if you can come up with any generic names for port or sherry, I would like to hear from you. There's none out there. You'll be groundbreaking if you can come up with one that people like or something. And I have the ear some to people, so we will be talking about it more. But if you can think of a name for port or sherry that is not port or sherry, that can be that could be recognized, that people can understand that it's a port style wine or a sherry style wine. And I don't even know if putting it on their sherry style, it would be acceptable. This is something I don't know. I don't know if the TTB will approve that. And we'll be talking about TTB. That's the Tobacco and Trade Bureau. I'm sorry, Tax and Trade Bureau, not tobacco. It's the other one. Tax and Trade Bureau. And Tax and Trade Bureau, TTB, has to approve every label that is submitted for wine in the United States. We can't just slap a label on a bottle of wine. It has to be approved by the TTB. And so therefore, they're no longer going to approve labels that say port or sherry. The signatory regions of this law that really were heavy on it were Napa Valley, Washington, Oregon, and Walla Walla. While the regions from the EU were Champagne, Cognac, and Cognac is another one that we might have a problem with. Douro, which is the region that port wine is produced, and Jerez, J-E-R-E-Z, which is the sherry region. Since that agreement, Sonoma County, Paso Robles, Chianti Classico, Tokay, Victoria, Australia, and Western Australia have also signed the declaration at a ceremony in Washington, D.C. So these are, all of these have joined in to protect the name. And basically, that's what they're doing. They're protecting the names of all these places. But, I don't know. We can agree on sparkling wine possibly, but again, port and sherry, I don't know what we're going to do. So, subject that I've been seeing a lot about lately, and I want to talk about that a little bit.
She did offer that one that she mentioned was starboard as like a ship, you know, port side and you have starboard side. So she said there was a wine out there that they had to name starboard, which was kind of interesting. But how many people really know that, though?
I mean, you know, you can – It's a good play on words, but it's something that, you know, the starboard, most people you walk up to and what's starboard? I don't know.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's a good name. I like it too. I agree with you. That's a very nice name, but it's a matter of education and we needed something that would be easy and people can understand. And so I don't know.
Like you said, with the other names that we've used for the refrigerator, Frigidaire, we've always called it, you know, in the past, Frigidaire, and there's so many different things. If you all of a sudden you started saying, well, you can't use the name monitor what you're looking at on your computer, then what are you going to use? All of a sudden, it's like all these years we've used these terms for these things, and now some law is saying, nope, can't do it anymore.
I know.
And I don't know how
Gladys had a great point there. You know, hand me a Kleenex. Well, that's a brand name. You know,
it is.
It's a tissue that you know, and so and like Band-Aid. I mean, we all call them Band-Aid. And the advertisement now, the little kids sit there and saying, you know, I'm stuck on Band-Aid brand because Band-Aid stuck on me. You know, they say
and
brand now because of. You know, it's an adhesive healing strip or whatever it's supposed to be. But we call it Band-Aid. And we've called it port and sherry and champagne for so long. And now they're saying, no, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And
so what are you gonna call it then that other people will know?
And that will be accepted.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You know, like you say, what other people know, but what would be accepted by everyone? I mean, you want something that's going to be universally accepted, and you know, it's just like naming of a car. I like the Chevy. What was it? The Cavalier or no? One of the Chevy cars years ago. They had the name of a little Chevy car. And when they introduced it to Mexico, the name interpreted into no-go in Spanish. And, you know, so they had to think of, what was that? I can't think of the name of that one now. But it was interpreted into no-go in Spanish. And so, you know, you have to be careful if we're going to start calling it something important. We got to be sure that it's something that's not going to cause a problem in it as it's interpreted or something too. I don't know. It's just it's a can of worms. I think it's and there's some people out there that are really pushing for this to happen. I mean, really strongly pushing for these things to be changed and all that. So again, listeners, if you have ideas for generic name for port or sherry or any of these others I mentioned, email me or call us on the program some evening or something and just let us know. So
that's the Chevy Nova.
Nova, that's it. The Nova.
I was just reading something about that, but
Yeah. I think of thank you. Yeah, there should be Nova in Spanish, no go. I talked about this right before Christmas, wine apps, and I want to bring it up a little bit here again before we sign off tonight. Says over a 500,000 apps in the iTunes stores now. And so it's no surprise that we've got ourselves some for the wines, and the wine apps are exploding. And most of them are just basic wine apps that gives you vintage charts, wine ratings, food pairings, the kind of stuff you can find in any wine magazine or guidebook, basically, if you want to spend for the wine app, you can. But there's some of them that are coming out that's impressing people, and I just, a couple, three of them here I want to tell you about. One of them called Wine Search. This is for the iPhone and iPad. It's $2, and it says here in the description, to be a wine geek, you need a decent stemware and the ability to track down unforgettable bottles. For the latter, there's Wine Search, basically an easy-to-use search database that taps into almost 5 million wines from 31,000 merchants via winesearcher.com. The one drawback, it doesn't let you search by state. It's a minor flaw in an otherwise incredibly handy tool. It's called Wine Search. That sounds interesting. Another one here, good for the Android, iPad, and iPhone, is $3. This is the most useful resource out there for the casual wine browser. Search for a wine and you will be connected to professional and user-generated reviews from Cellar Tracker, the world's biggest bottle management site. You can scan the barcode on a bottle and bring up the information, get price comparisons, keep track of your personal wine inventory after you make purchases, or find a wine store, bar, or winery nearby. Simply put, it is the most comprehensive of the all-in-one wine apps, and that's called core.kz if you want to check it out. So a couple of wine apps out there that caught my attention.
Wow.
So, I'm done for the night. We'll continue with Oregon next week.
I believe we have a special guest.
Yeah, we do.
For that? That's the 23rd one? Okay.
That's the 23rd one, yeah. We have someone coming on with us next week, so.
Good. Okay.
And we have a guest.
Very cool. Yeah, the one that I think couldn't come on a couple of weeks ago or last week and
right.
or something. I wrote that
Phil one. Phil from Alex Ely, I think it is, yeah. Alex Ely. This should be fun. Phil and Alex Ely is a kosher winery. It's going to be our first kosher winery we've talked to, so this should be a lot of fun.
Hmm. Okay, very cool. All right, let's see. I have, so we'll go ahead and close the show on the other side of my page. Take notes on every one of these calls here.
I know. Me too. I got all in front of me spread out with notes.
Okay. I thought I was the only second.
No, I couldn't just do that.
And a couple weeks ago, I made a form, and that's not working out too good. So I just went back to freehanding on the back of a sheet of paper. So a little too technical. We have about less than 2 minutes. 31 minutes of the live show. But let's go ahead and, yeah, we'll close this down and we'll see you all next week, which would be, I believe, the 23rd.
Yep.
Pull up the calendar, 23rd of February at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And thank you very much to our special guest tonight, Gladys, with the Wine Institute of California. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, having you. Very good.
Wow. I heard them one other time this night, and they're back up there. Just a reminder again, do like us on Facebook. Find us on Facebook. It's real simple. Go to facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. All one word, no spaces or anything between any of that. It's All About Wine BTR on Facebook. Or follow the show on Twitter. Same thing, twitter.com/allaboutwinebtr. And that's all one word again. And I think I sent a couple of tweets during this show, so that was kind of interesting. Yeah. Plus the links to the website. I did references as well to discovercaliforniawines.com and wineinstitute.org.
That's a cool site,
yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of stuff on there.
Yeah.
And if you have questions or anything about the show or for the show, or you want
or
to be a guest,
names for Sherry Report.
Names for Sherry Report. That's correct. That's on the other side of my sheet. Yeah, there it is. Definitely email allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Let's see, Florida State's Winery. That's where Ron hails from, among other things. Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Okay. Time constraints. We had to close the window. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52. That is 4 miles west of Interstate 75. You go to exit 285 State Road 52 and go west about 4 miles, and you'll see the signs for Florida State's Winery located there in Land O' Lakes. Well, I guess it's on the outskirts because it's not the Land O' Lakes that I know of is
right
on the edge.
Land O'Lakes, yeah.
Yep. Very, very cool visit out there, and definitely sample some world-class wines at the Florida State's Winery. Open daily from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m., and you can do tastings there as well. And, you know, have a picnic, bring your pet. It's pet-friendly, kid-friendly. Most major credit cards are accepted and only closed on major holidays. Wow. Open almost year-round except for, what,
almost.
6, 7, 8, whatever holidays you have.
I think that may be four.
Four?
Yeah, I think maybe four or five. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, there you go. So you have so basically just open all the time. It's just 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. And for more information, call the winery direct at area code 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. Or visit the website at www.floridaestateswines.com. Floridaestateswines.com. Really cool. Have a really nice gift shop, a great place in the back to hang out and drink the wines, and it's fantastic. And there's no wine fest this weekend, so it'll be
we have probably classes this weekend.
You do have classes, wow.
Yeah, I have one Saturday and Sunday this weekend. So.
Oh, wow, you're going to be busy.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Those are 3-hour classes, aren't they?
Yes, they
are. They run usually? Wow.
Yeah. Actually,
amazing.
They run a little bit longer because I start getting Gabby and I talk too much and so.
Okay. So if you plan to go to a class or you want to check out a class, plan to be there at least 3 hours. So,
yes, right.
Yeah, very good presentation and everything is great. So let's see. I guess we will see everybody. Does that cover everything? Yeah, contact
I think so.
Information. All right. So we will see you all next week, Thursday, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you all for listening. And thank you, Ron, as always, and our special guest tonight, Gladys, with the Wine Institute of California. I really appreciate it again. And we'll see you all next time. Thanks a lot.
See you all next time. Thank you for listening.
Have a great week. Bye.
Yeah.